Thank you, Donna, and thank you, everybody, for being here. I'm going to say this, I think, at the end, but I just want to let you know, I have had the world's best time hanging out all afternoon, sitting in the middle of all of our souls and all of our creation, coming up with this topic, and I'm really looking forward to just sharing a lot with you. Of course, what I'm sharing is what we collectively have come up together with. So the topic, living in the eye of life's storm, it just came to me just this morning. And then I started looking at all sorts of pictures in my little mind about it. So what I'd like to do is invite all of us today to spend some precious time together in that special, unique, sought-after place that lives securely and solidly within each one of us. And that place is that internal eye, E-Y-E, of life's perhaps frequent storms, or that central reservoir of deep inner peace. And I'm going to refer to inner peace because that term just grabbed me as I was preparing this. And we could also call it that soulful personal residence of what we've come to call our God self. And as we all know, an intimate part of our human makeup is this innate capacity that we have, you and I. In fact, it's our birthright to house our divine source right smack dab in the center of our heart and soul. And not only to house that source, but to interact with it, to play in its loving embrace, to feel its unending blessings, to enjoy its soothing, massaging presence in our lives, and ultimately to let our awareness so merge with this inner source that we finally recognize that we're actually no different from that source. And more important, perhaps, as if something could be more important, when we look out at life through this eye, the eye of that inner sanctuary, we see life through the consciousness of that divine source. That is, we see life the way God sees it. And that view, to me, is absolutely remarkable. For example, from that vantage point, we see life not primarily through the eyes of duality, but through the eyes of unity. We notice the perfection of all creation, every creation, including the perfection of every human being, including ourselves. We witness and appreciate the wonder of it all, that is, the awesomeness of creation, the beauty of every sunrise, the preciousness of all the rituals we walk through in life, and the magnificence of every aspect of life. Then we embrace every circumstance and situation with a loving acceptance and actually find, even in the drama, the very soul of life. And finally, we notice that ultimately, as I said above, there's no difference at all between what we're seeing out there and what we're experiencing inside ourselves. You know, side by side with every benefit that I've just mentioned, every benefit of living in the eye of that storm, I sometimes think that the very best side effect of sitting in the middle of this sacred inner space is the effect of what I'd like to call a profound inner peace. Inner peace. Inner peace, I think, is probably one of the most central core quests that we all engage in, probably from the very first encounters we have with those compelling storms of life, or life's unexpected disappointments, its pains, its aches, its ups, its downs. Paul Brunton, an English philosopher and mystic, wrote these words: "There is an image of God within each man. Once seen, he will forever after court union with it." And I know that for me personally, as I look back over the years of my personal life path and whatever processes I've been involved in, that search and quest, the quest for inner peace, presented itself as a consistently very loud background, not just music, but scream from the depths of my being from early on. Something in my personal psyche just seemed to be drastically hungry for that, quote, peace that surpasses all understanding. And I know that without that peace, many things in my life seemed downright overwhelming. And yet, once I found it, once I had it, an unexplainable inner calm pervaded my psyche and quietly uttered some little message that said, you know, it's all okay, and uttered that message into my nervous system. And I just felt better when peace was alive and well within me. So, inner peace. Let's think about it together. Let's contemplate it. Let's maybe even welcome it or embrace it. And let's spend this time together just rolling around in its warm nest. First of all, though, while I craft some words and express some concepts about this phenomenon called inner peace, I'd like to suggest to you that you let those words be nothing more than just a stimulus, a trigger to your own innermost connection to your innate, alive, empowering, personal inner peace. The inner peace that always lives within your depths, whether you've been consciously aware of it through the day or not. So, if you let your thoughts about inner peace just go where they want to, without directing them onto any special track, for example, it's interesting where those thoughts might lead you. For me, as I was sitting in my little cave through the afternoon contemplating inner peace for this evening's time together, my personal thoughts, once I gave them permission to go ahead into independent, unrestricted thinking, went in some unique directions and seemed to want to make some following points to my understanding. First, this is the first point that inner peace wanted to make to me. Inner peace is inherent in our makeup. It's in all of us. It's right in our core. It's our central makeup. It's actually the very essence of each of us, of you, of me, in its very first expressive form, the form of a quiet, serene, calm, centered self. And that's inner peace. Second, inner peace is not just an occasional experience. It's a state. It's our inherent state of being. It's like the, you know, something that just when we were born, just as a birthright, we lived in a state of inner being, inner peace. And I think I see that a lot when little babies are born. There's just something, there are two things about little babies that grab my attention. Of course, when I was a parent of a little baby, there were other things that grabbed my attention, but we need not go there. But two things. One is this gorgeous, beauteous light that just shines off of them. But two, that sense of inner peace. And, you know, there's a psychological finding, and how they found it, I don't know, but I learned it years back. I read it a couple places, that a baby does not recognize that there's a difference between him or herself and his or her mother or nurturing parent or surroundings. So there's that experience of oneness. And so it's that state of being. And that state of being, that state of inner peace, is the central, dynamic, intimate foundation of everything else that we are. It's that inner peace isn't dependent at all on outer circumstances, nor is it just an occasional visitor passing us in the night. Instead, inner peace, that inner state, is a constant, consistent, predictable state. It never goes away. And then the third point that inner peace wanted to make to me is that this innate state of peace is available. It's available to you, to me, it's available to our awareness. It's there, in fact, so that we can use it as a daily resource, as a minute-by-minute internal root system for navigating ourselves through the intricacies of our life. It's meant to be experienced. That's what it's there for, to be felt, to fill our consciousness, to be an integral part of this thing that we call human experience. In that sense, inner peace is indeed our most natural state. You all know Eckhart Tolle, probably more intimately than I do. In his book, The Power of Now, he expressed it this way. Being is deep within every created form as its innermost invisible and indestructible essence. This means that it's accessible to you now as your own deepest self, your true nature. Now, in a sense, these aspects that I talked about, these few messages that inner peace wanted to give me, are no surprise. We all know their truth, and I think few of us would disagree with the accuracy of them. However, I found myself asking what perhaps is the next logical question. How come with inner peace being our natural state and so available to us, how come so many of us don't feel that peace? Or to state it conversely, the other way around, why is it that so few of us get so lost in our daily dramas that we miss the boat of this peaceful reality as we grapple with life's seemingly compelling challenges? Well, how many of us know the real answer to this question? We all have our own particular viewpoint or our own opinion, but my sense is that the fullest answer to the question just is beyond all of us. That said, though, it just may be that many of us carry an unconscious assumption about life, and this is why we miss the inner peace. It's an assumption that sets us up to forget or bypass that inner treasure chest of peace, an assumption that says this, that being human is all about tackling life's messy challenges. It's all about overcoming its many obstacles. It's about wrestling with its demanding conflicts. And I think once we accept that assumption, and it's something that almost all of us do, usually subconsciously, we inadvertently call our awareness to preoccupy itself with exactly those issues, holding the underlying belief that if I don't get fully involved in the wrestling match, I'm not doing the human scene right, or I'm not committed to my growth, or I'm in some version of denial, or somehow I'm messing up. In this regard, let's go back to our good buddy Eckhart Tolle and listen to how he finished the thought that I quoted to you only a minute ago. Referring to this inner state of peace, or being, which is his word for it, he says, "You can know it only when the mind is still, when you are present, fully and intensely in the now." And I want to repeat that just a bit. We can know it only when the mind is still and when we are present fully and intensely in the now. When the mind is still, when we're in the now. Let's explore that a little bit. And I think you all know that I'm not really one of those who denigrate or put down our human mind. This mind of ours, I think, is a gorgeous part of creation, and I deeply believe that it deserves our respect, our honor. So putting the mind down or suspecting it of treason or sentencing it to a life sentence of mistrust aren't exactly my modus operandi. But I believe that Eckhart makes a great point. Our mind is great for many things, like deciding what to have for dinner, like doing library research or internet searches about an issue's salient factors, or maybe evaluating the advantages and disadvantages of a certain polemic and the like. But its strong point is managing this wonderful world of duality in which we live. Its strong point is not accessing the divine realm of silence that lives in the inner sanctum of our human depths. For that, we need something more. And to make that point a little more specific, Fyodor Dostoevsky, I'm sure most of you just spent the day reading Dostoevsky, the great 19th century Russian novelist, once wrote these words, "Only the heart knows how to find what is precious." Again, only the heart knows how to find what is precious. So let's take that and blend it with Eckhart's advice. And first of all, let's just invite our minds to be still right now. Right now, still and quiet, calm and relaxed, allowing and permissive, open and receptive, neutral and impartial. And that's done right now. Then let's proceed to the second part of Eckhart's advice, to be fully present in the now. And that deserves our spending a few minutes with its special invitation, the invitation to live in the now. You know, I've been fascinated for a long time with the term, the now, the moment. And I think we'd all agree that the now is one of those mystical concepts that carries such a powerful wisdom and an elegant truth just in its simple wording, like two words, the now. And simply uttering these two nondescript words can bring forth into our right brains images of maybe like sitting in a space somewhere beyond time, or outside the box of regular dualistically perceived life, and perhaps just allowing the comforting grassy blanket of timelessness to carry us to lands, invisible lands, where no concerns or no problems grab us. To me, these two simple, imagination-filled words, they just delight my soul. They just awaken within me some seemingly ancient memory of timelessness right in the middle of time, or an image of a consoling island in the midst of an unpredictable ocean, or a special place where time and space come to a complete standstill and nothing exists except some divine presence, some infinite source, some bigger reality, some wise sage. Or it's an image of a special spot or perch above the forest of my life where somehow I can see forever. Sounds like a song. I can know what's going on from a fuller perspective, and I can laugh at it all because I'm somehow grooving on the inner peace that this timelessness, this island, this divine presence, this above the forest perch allows me. And that's, in a nutshell, what it does for me. What images do the words living in the now engender in your right brain? Or what thoughts do they trigger in your left brain? Or what intuitive awareness or truth arise from your soul when you hear those simple but elegant words, the now? The now is what lives fully in that sacred inner sanctum at the core of each and every one of us, you and me. It's that inner sanctum where the divine is alive and well, or where the divine is. The now is that place within you and me where inner peace roams freely, where it speaks its simple, quiet truth, and where it invites us to wrap ourselves just easily and gently in its loving presence. I do believe the now is it's a fancy, wonderful word that describes the pure source out of which exquisite inner peace is allowed to be birthed. It's a sacred, timeless reality that sits in the middle of our consciousness, beckoning us to remember, to remember, to remember who we are, to remember what life is really about, to remember why we're hanging out in this human dimension. It invites us to recall the simple truth, the elegant wisdom, the deepest reality, because when we do, we have no recourse but to be in absolute peace about anything, everything that could possibly jump up onto our daily plate of invitations. For example, and I know you've got plenty of examples on your own, and you don't need mine, but, you know, bear with me. Let's say you come home one day to discover your life partner or marriage partner telling you that the relationship is over. Or you walk into your boss's office to hear that your job is being terminated immediately and you've got bills piled up to the ceiling that need to be paid now with no income. Or a gripping, possibly lifelong personal issue or problem that's raised its ugly head and is torturing you once again. I think you get the picture. One or more of life's gripping, seemingly irresolvable problems has invaded your space, totally grabbed your attention, and refused to lower its screaming head, its screaming voice in your head. This circumstance seems to scream out for what? For your undivided attention, for your creative problem solving, for some type of engaged involvement on your part. That is, it seems to say, come on, put on your wrestling tights, jump into the ring. Now there's a sight. And let's have it out. Let's get on with it. Let's do something about this. This is important. We've got to solve it. And actually, it's at that very moment, that moment when it's so tempting to put on those tights, now don't go there, and enter the ring to wrestle with the monster of the moment, to slay the dragon, to prove our worth. It's at that very moment that a wiser self that lives and thrives somewhere within us, you, me, perhaps in that inner state of being, to use Eckhart Tolle's words, or in that eternal now at your core, to use Ajusanti's term, might quietly invite you to hang out first. First, before you go about tackling this tricky issue, before you jump into that ring, in your own personal sacred space, that space of deep powerful inner peace, that inner sanctum of unlimited being and power, in that amazing resource of divine wonder, in that heart-centered pool of unending now, that is, in truth, your fullest source of power, your most profound strength, your personal energy-rich garden of wonder. And I'm just watching all of us just hanging out in that space, just instead, in this moment, instead of jumping into the ring for the wrestling match, we just let ourselves sink into this space of the heart, this space of the soul, this inner sanctum. And so, yes, what we're suggesting is that each of us might want to come home to our innate center. Just like a child faces the challenges of school, then comes home to the security and safety of his or her home, to the wise counsel of a loving parent, to the place where that child's inner wisdom somehow has permission to come out and wax eloquently and lovingly and remind the child to remember where her or his strengths are. So here you are, in this moment, in the midst of whatever human challenge of staggering proportions, or if you prefer, maybe it's not so staggering, it's just one of life's daily little challenges that catches your attention 47 times a day. Here you are, and you decide to come home to the now, to your inner womb of loving divine presence, to that place where your resonant inner peace awaits you, just like the parent awaits the child coming home from school, awaits you with extended arms, with a little snack, with a little something to drink, and says, come, sit, and let's talk about your day, and let me give you whatever perspective might be helpful. And now that you're there, what do you find? You find a home. You find your home. You find the home that was created from the very beginning, begging for you to return to it. You find that home where you can find refuge. It's the perfect home, the home where you can remember, where you can remember. Remember, for example, that it all matters so very much, and it doesn't really matter at all. And remember, perhaps, that nothing of this world of ups and downs can really take anything away from your beautiful essence, from whom you really are. Remember that this is all a game that you came here to play, and it's okay if you seem to be losing the game. It's okay if you're winning the game. After all, it's just a game. Inviting you to remember. Remember that you and I are here to do a dance, and that you're good at some dances and not so good at others, and maybe you're not here to master all the dances. So maybe it's okay to let it go. Let it go. Let it go. Or it's an invitation to remember that really there are no bad guys out there, no matter what our trained minds love of being face to face with the challenges of the themes of victim or perpetrator happen to be. And finally, it's an invitation to remember that we're perfect, you and I. This situation is perfect, and all the bit players in the current scenario are perfect despite all appearances. You know, it reminds me of a touching little quote that I found some years back in a little book called The Key. It's a book of sayings, basically, written by a Buddhist monk in California based on the teachings of the Buddha. And the quote goes like this: there is nothing wrong in the universe. Wrong exists in our limited view of the universe. And if I may again, there's nothing wrong in the universe. Wrong exists in our limited view of the universe. Or to say the same thing in perhaps a more positive way, William Blake, the noted 18th century English poet and painter, once wrote these words: if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear as it is, infinite. So, if I may be a bit bold at this moment, I'd like to suggest an even fuller picture of this sacred inner home. I'd like to take what we've said and expound on it a little bit. And it's this home where the doors of perception are indeed cleansed, where everything does appear as it is, infinite. And the first thing I'd like to say, I think I've got about 3 points here, is that I deeply believe that this home, this inner home, is our primary identity. It's this God self that we really are. This divine indwelling soul is in reality our truest self. This you that lives internally in the inner now of life, this soulful self that's the deepest resource of your human presence, this inner sanctum of your being is in fact your real self, your fundamental self, your essential self, your powerful self, your primary self. And in contrast, your personality, or ego as we've come to call it, is nothing more, nothing less than an external expression of this mighty, divine, wondrous, amazing, remarkable, brilliant God self that in truth you are, that in truth is the dynamic inner force that's wisely calling the shots of your life, that's brilliantly in charge of the happenings of your eventful career or path, and that knows intimately the fun game that you came here to play. Yes, that inner you knows that this is all a game we're playing. And I personally believe that your personality, or ego, if you will, deserves our fullest love, even our unending adoration, because it's, to me, it's like the perfect arms and hands of that inner sanctum, of that God self, of that innermost being, that essential you. It's the artistic expression of your creative source, and it's got every quality of God alive and well in its every fiber. So that's the really great news about your personality and ego. That said, I think we're still faced with the question, who are you? You're both your God self and your human self, your perfect being and your human ego. Both exist like two sides of the same coin, like a horse and carriage. Oh, you knew I was going there, didn't you? You just saw it coming. And they are much more united, this divine self, human self, this essence of you and this ego of you. They're much more united, much more bonded than I think any of us realize, even myself. But the essence of you, the place where you really live, the innermost reality of who you are, lies at that central, timeless space of inner peace and tranquility, right smack dab in the center of your human presence. And my personal sense, and I, for whatever reason, I love this, is that our personality is actually fed every moment of every day, nourished, nurtured by this invisible light field that's called your essence, that's called that space of inner peace. Every moment, every day, I believe that our ego really gets it, gets that its life source is sourced in your precious God self, and that your ego loves this source. And while we're at it, that any supposed conflict between the ego and the spirit, any presumed resistance or fight on the part of the ego vis-a-vis our vast and all-loving spirit doesn't exist except or only in the creative imaginative thinking of our mind. And so your personality and every other part of your human dynamics knows its source, is at peace with its source, loves being an intimate, treasured, loved, empowered part of that source that you are, that inherent, perfect being that you are. And there's no inherent separation, again, except as a story that we've inventively created and, for whatever reason, have loved keeping alive. Therefore, who you are, who I am, is a being of divine quality, with an innate capacity to live both in the timelessness of the eternal now and in the time frame of this dualistic adventure that we have given ourselves to by being here. And that capacity to live inside and outside of time allows us to be inside the perceived storm of our human dramas and equally in the timeless eye of that storm at one and the same time. And that leads me to a second point I'd like to make. To me, that is the greatest truth about this funny dimension that we've come to call the three-dimensional world. The truth that we can undergo any grueling path, face any arduous challenge, embrace any daunting invitation, and we can do it, bear with me, with bravery with confidence and even with joy, no matter what the circumstances, simply because we have the privilege and the right to live in two worlds at the same time, the world of duality and the world of oneness, the world of expression and the world of being, the world of timelessness and the world of timefulness, or if you will, the raging storm and its peaceful, all-knowing eye. And I know that I may leave a few of you wondering about my sanity at this point, and actually for me, I gave up claiming any such trait years ago, so feel free, you won't hurt my feelings. But it occurs to me that living in this eye of life, in this inner sanctum of divine being, in this now of the self that we are, actually allows us to live perennially in the truth that life around us and creation exuding from us is the best game in the world. We wouldn't have it any other way. It's the most fun adventure possible. So bear with me while I explain that a little bit. Our inner peace that lives right in the middle of us allows us the timeless view that we all invented the image and the nature of the very world in which we live. That individually and collectively, we decided that we wanted an energy-rich experience in which we could splash our creative side, in which we could find our groove, just like good old Stella did, and in which we can play in its unlimited possibilities. So our vision from that inner space of the now allows us to see clearly that, in fact, we needed, or wanted at least, duality as a backdrop from which, and a foundation on which, we can invent possibilities. We can live them out. We can see them to fruition. And then we can move on to other possibilities. And maybe better than that, we have the privilege of seeing that this creative play is the only reason we invented this human world. Therefore, no matter what's happening in, around, or inside us, no matter what, we know in our innermost being that it's all about creation, and it's only about creation. It's not about winning or losing. It's not about being a perpetrator or a victim. It's not about achieving our purpose or not. It's not about being loved or hated. It's not about winning or losing. It's only about creative play. And in the middle, in the eye, in the center of our being, we get that. It's only about creative play. And may I repeat, it's only about creative play. Sri Aurobindo, the 20th century Indian from India, philosopher and mystic, who actually developed a spiritual practice called integral yoga, wrote this: "What, you ask, was the beginning of it all? It is this, existence, with a capital E, existence that multiplied itself for sheer delight of being and plunged into numberless trillions of forms so that it might find itself innumerably." My translation of that is, what was the beginning of it all? What's it all about, Alfie? It's so that existence, or God, or the infinite could create this amazing imaginative space in which it multiplied into gazillions of forms, we being some of those, so that it could find itself, meaning so that it could play in the sheer joy of creation in endless, endless ways. And that's what you are, that's what I am. We are the play of life, and we are the source of that life too. So we are the divine creative source, and that lives in our heart, in our soul, in our core, in ourself. And we are the creation that is all about play. And knowing that, which of course lives and breathes its truth from the inner eye of our timeless nature, once grasped by us, once we get it, it allows us an enormous embrace of this creativity, of the fun, of the adventure, of the ups and downs, of the drama, of the wonder of the play, even if at first knee-jerk reaction, it looks horrible. We instantly can get, oh, this is the creative play. And that's why I dearly believe you and I decided to play the human game for the sheer, elegant fun of the ridiculous, funny, bizarre, delightful, crazy, and silly game that it is. And once we can embrace the silliness, the insanity, the beauty, the horrendousness, the awfulness, the ecstasy, the beauty of it all, once we can do that, we then can embrace it, we can live it, we can take that Coney Island ride, and we can literally find the beauty in everything. Again, once we get that, which again lives daily and consistently and accessibly at our core, available to us every minute of every day, once we get that, we're free. Or, if I may, to use an already overused term, we're realized, we're enlightened, we're living in the pure, simple truth. And believe it or not, we can actually have fun. And that leads to the third point that I'd like to make, which I think is my last point. When we're in this sacred eye of life's creative play or storm, we see the play just like God sees it, just like a wise and all-knowing parent sees the activities of his or her child, perhaps too serious child. In short, there's little distinction between the divine and the human within us. There's pure divinity seeing through our eyes, and we're having that experience, a divine experience being human. And once we start seeing life like God sees it, we've taken glorious possession of, you guessed it, our loving heart. For, and this is my deepest sense, that heart of ours, that heart of yours, that heart of mine is exactly where that unified eye through which our God self sees the world lives and thrives. And what we see, you and I, is a vision filled with our own loving embrace. Through the singular eye of the, if I may, the sacred heart within, we automatically are in love. We're in love with our pain, in love with our challenges, in love with our anxieties, in love with our joys, in love with both the obnoxious human beings and the delightful human beings around us. Why? Because we created them. They're creations of our heart and soul. We brought them, created them, invented them into our lives, brought them into this moment so that we could and we would have a certain kind of experience. We created them because they are the perfect creations for this moment in time, and maybe in the next moment we won't need them, they won't need us, and we'll be somewhere else. Also, once we start hanging out more full-time in this sacred heart of life and of self, we find the magic of the now. We realize to the depths and heights of our being that in this magical, perfect now, we no longer need to rely on our dualistic judgments. We don't even need to rely on our dualistic values or our principles or our beliefs or our theories that, let's face it, stand us in excellent stead in moving us through those intricacies, those challenges of life. But once we go to our source, to that space of inner peace, to that eye of life that lives within us, we don't even need those values, principles, beliefs, theories. That's right, we can just let them all go, knowing that whenever it's important for them to come back, to be a participating factor in the game of any given moment, they automatically reappear for our creative, inventive use, and might I add, for our creative, non-addictive, inventive use, so that we can make the game of life even more interesting in that moment. Other than that, we can let them all go and simply enjoy the freedom of living in this moment, watching the creative play before us, having fun as we move ourselves into and through the creative play of it all, and feeling and knowing the inner peace that's infused into every molecule of the play of life. And in closing, I'd like to share with you that, as I hinted at the beginning, I've had a ball through this afternoon, opening myself to the inspiration that our collective souls put together, put into words, wanted to put into words during this time together, witnessing these bits of truth or wisdom just dropping into place, not only in my mind, but in my heart, in my soul, in my conscious awareness, as together, you and I and we together created, oh, we could call it unconsciously, but I prefer to call it soulfully, as we created soulfully this hour together, just like we create every moment of our lives together. Whether we're together or apart, in the spirit of the perfection of each and every moment, and from that sacred space of inner peace that any storm's eye knows how to see clearly. And it is my pleasure to inflict upon you, in closing, another of my poems. And I'm calling it This World of Duality. What a life! Ups and downs, ins and outs, highs and lows, topsy-turvy, brainy and zany, fasts and slows, inside out and outside in, upside down and downside up. It's so confusing, so baffling, so bizarre, so nuts. It never stops, this funny world that makes no sense, runs so wild, takes no prisoners, is so intense. What a life, so full of risk, so hit and miss, so rough and tough. It's a world of chance, a dare, a gamble, a venture of luck. What a life. We're all on the brink in this shaky, wobbly roller rink. Would it ever take a calmer turn, do you think? Be more normal? Be only kind, perhaps gentle or mild? Would it ever stop hurting, stop confusing, stop baffling us all? Would it ever give up the ride, the drama, the pain, the strain? Would it? Could it? Even if it wanted it in its brain? Sure it hurts, sure it wounds, and sure it's hard, this willy-nilly, rocking, shocking earth of ours. Sure it pulls us, pushes us, throws us, nudges us, but would we want it softer, smoother, without the fuss? Would we miss the ride, the twists and turns that make us cuss? I don't know about you, but for me, I'd yearn for the jolts, the shocks, the spurts, the dance, the unexpected, unforeseen, unknown chance. I'd long for the surprising, the startling, the staggering prance in this world of opposites, of differences, of hubbub, of rants. I'd pine for the comedy and tragedy, the hue and cry of a world that knows how to live and die, of a world that pushes and pulls and grows and shrinks and loves me, throws me, plays me, moves me on its full spectrum instrument of wobbly instincts. Yes, I love this puzzling earth, this realm of dazzling, whirling, swirling worth, of joy and misery, of laughter and pain, of sunshine and rain. This confusing blend of inconsistency and strain, this world of wonder and stress, of mystery and pain. Yes, I'm in love with its unknowable mysteries, its exotic might that shoots me wondrously to its ecstatic height, then plunges me inexplicably to its delirious depth, and so gives me the surprise ride of my unsuspecting life and the surreal, real-deal feel of the meaning of life. Now gratitude is on my lips, in my heart, in my esteem, as I live, love, hurt, grieve, scream, and beam on the wild ride of this planet of whim, in this world of dream. Thank you so much for an amazing time, for a beautiful experience together, and for the utter privilege of sharing with you the thoughts that we have created together, as all together we're creating not just awareness and understanding, but we're creating the very freedom that it's all about. We're creating the beauty of life in our experience, and we're creating the deeper connection with, a deeper living in, a deeper oneness with, and a deeper profound celebration of that precious eye of the storm, that precious, beautiful inner peace that lives, is alive and well, and is the innate self that we all are.